From ACB Radio Mainstream, welcome to Tuesday Topics. For the next hour, we will be discussing a topic of interest to blind and visually impaired people. And now, from Miami, Florida, the host of Tuesday Topics, Paul Edwards.
Hi, I am Paul Edwards, and I'm in Miami, Florida. Welcome to this evening's edition of Tuesday Topics. I would like to let everybody know that Brian continues to be on an extended leave of absence taking care of family stuff, but we look forward to having him back as our producer. Please remember we do have now an email address, TuesdayTopics@acbradio.org. Please feel free to drop us a note. Let us know what you think of what we're doing. Suggest ideas. Volunteer to be a guest if you like. And tell us why we should interview you. I know why we should interview our guest tonight. She is doing something that I do, something that I've never done, and something that it's been a very long time since I've done. And you'll understand exactly what I mean by all of that when I get an opportunity to introduce you to our guest, whose name is Monica Williard. Monica is from Georgia, has a teenage offspring, or spring off. And maybe we should begin by asking asking Monica to tell us a little bit about herself and a little bit about where she lives and what she does.
Well, good evening, everybody. I live just north of Atlanta, and I have a teenage daughter who is 14. I'm a single mom, and this, to me, is one of the more fun things in life, to have a teen in the house, because when children are little, you know, you're focusing on doing things with them and coloring and watching cartoons. But when they're teenagers, you can share ideas. You can talk about music and what it means and share books and things like that. And so I'm enjoying being a mom with a teenager. I have two jobs. One is that I work as the marketing director in my dad's small business, and then I also, it is not a paying job, but I work several hours a day volunteering for Bookshare. For any of you that have not heard of Bookshare, it is a service that turns print books into audio and braille for people that have reading disabilities. But basically, those are the things that I do, and one of the reasons that I came here tonight is also to talk about blogging, which is something that I do as part of my job as a marketing director.
Cool. Let's start with Bookshare, since that's the thing I know most about, since I'm also a Bookshare volunteer. So essentially, Bookshare starts off by encouraging people to scan books, and then they get put into a library. So do volunteers just scan books? Is that all that they get to do in Bookshare, or are there other jobs that people can do if they don't want to just scan books all the time?
That's a good question. Actually, scanning is only one task that a volunteer can do, and in some sense, it is the most visible, but that doesn't mean it's the most important. Actually, there are two other things that we need volunteers to do just as much of, if not more. One is that we have something called a validator, who will take a book that someone has scanned and make sure that it's complete and, you know, fix any obvious scanos that the scanner missed. And so that validator is very important. They're kind of a gatekeeper to get the books into the collection. The other thing that volunteers are needed for is in getting the word out about Bookshare. I don't know if you know this, Paul, but a grant has been given to Bookshare by the Department of Education that gives any student a free Bookshare membership to encourage literacy for children. But even with all of that, out of a community of over a million blind people, right now we only have, I believe it's somewhere around 18,000 people who seem to know about Bookshare and use it. So we need people to help get the word out. We need people to scan books and to validate books. And all three of those things are very important.
Scanning is pretty straightforward. Most people can understand that, though. I think one of the things that actually pleases me as a longtime scanner and a longtime book share volunteer is the fact that the standards or the expected standards for books is actually rising. When Bookshare started, there were three levels of books that Bookshare would accept, excellent, good, and fair. And now fair books are no longer accepted. That is, if there are more than a certain number of errors, the book is no longer being accepted. And I think that's actually pretty exciting because fair books were actually readable. There was just some junk in the middle. And another thing, I guess, that is being done at the moment is people are actually going through the collection and looking for books that have a fair rating, and they're rescanning those. Is that right, Monica?
Yes, that is correct. We're going through and replacing books that have challenges. You know, when Bookshare started, scanning technology was at a different place. There have been huge breakthroughs in what OCR programs like Kurzweil and OpenBook and even FindReader can do. And so if we use a book and get a fresh scan, the chances are good that we're going to produce a much cleaner, easier to read copy. And so we're going through and taking care of the books rated fair, and then over time we're beginning to replace some of the books that have a good rating, because while good books that are rated good are readable, they still do have some scanning errors in them. And especially with students reading the books, we want the quality to be as high as possible, especially with students who are just learning to read Braille.
Well, that's excellent. I suspect that once we open things up, people will have some other questions about Bookshare. But I want to move on to something that I know very little about. And God knows there's lots of those things. But that is blogging. For those of us who are out there and who live in another world, can you provide us with a definition of blogging? And then, if you would, tell us, do we need special programs to blog, or do we use what we typically have on our computers?
Okay, I'll start with the first question then. A blog is kind of an abbreviation. It stands for a web log, but people call them blogs. And the neat thing about a blog is, just like a website, it can be very plain or very fancy. It can be about just about any subject you want it to be. You can find blogs about cookbooks, about somebody's pet goldfish. Microsoft uses a blog to keep developers abreast with what they're doing. Same thing with Google and Yahoo. In fact, blogging is such a big part of the web landscape. I'll bet everybody here has gone to a blog but just didn't realize that's what they were looking at. If you ever went to Jonathan Mosen's blog that he had, the Mosen Explosion, that was a blog, even though it looked like a website. It was a blog. And the thing that makes a blog uniquely what it is that they're written by common people, not people with a lot of programming expertise. You don't need special software to have a blog. For example, if you use a service like LiveJournal or Blogger, you can do a post from your web browser, just type it in, or you can type in a post from your email, which is how I do most of mine. There are a lot of different services out there, and most of them are free. Blogger is owned by Google. And you can tell you're on a Blogger blog because its web address will be something along the lines of, I've got one in front of me. It's edgorman.blogspot.com. And anytime you see Blogspot, you know that's a Blogger address. Same thing with LiveJournal. It has free and then paid accounts if you want extra perks. There's one called WordPress and TypePad. Those are the most common blog services. And then people can also have blogs on a service like MySpace or Facebook. So there's a whole world out there. If you go to Google, it even has a separate place for blog searches. So it's something that's been taking the web by storm. Finally, the one thing that I will also say about blogs is that because they're updated by common people, not necessarily companies. They'll be updated at varying lengths. I've got one blog that I update just about every day. I've got another blog that I write in about once a month or when I get bored.
Okay. I want to make sure I understand, and then you can correct the errors. I'm assuming that blog as an abbreviation for weblog essentially is another way of describing kind of serial communication. So person A, let's say Monica, posts a message about, let's see, whether 14-year-olds should have their ears pierced. And then other people can, in effect, add on to that thread on that website, and somebody coming in could actually see that, the information that they've added. Is that the basic idea?
Yes. Some blogs have the commenting disabled, but what you're describing is called commenting. And if I write a post, people can come and say, I don't like that, or I love that. Or they can give a totally different way of handling a situation. And so you'll frequently see comments. The other thing is that a blog can be done by one person, you know, starting it, or it can be done by a group of people, each of whom has an author account on that blog and can write posts, and it'll show their names. Like if you and I and Brian were all running a blog together, it would say, post, coffee break, posted by Paul at 9:53 p.m. And so it would do that as a group blog. That's why I was saying that they can be done in many, many different configurations. Some of them can even have audio and video files that stream as part of the blog.
Now, I seem to remember that Jonathan Mosens actually had individual blogs, if you like, or I guess posts that he would do, but then people could actually post responses to each of his blogs. So I guess really the blog are the individual posts by whoever the star of the show is, and then he may or may not allow other people to make rude remarks about what he's put there, yes?
Yes, exactly. Each one of those conversations on Jonathan's blog were called posts, and then you could comment to those. That's why I asked if you had a Tuesday Topic blog, because you could post, for example, what your shows are about, and people could give you feedback on what they think after they listen to the broadcast.
Cool. So let's spend just a couple of minutes talking about teenage daughter. Do you think there are any special issues that you have raising a teenage daughter as a blind mom that are different from those that operate for somebody who can see?
Well, yes, I do think so. But there, you know, any family has its challenges. In ours, one of the challenges that I had to work around was that as a blind parent, it's really easy to over-depend on your child to do the things that normally a sighted person could do. For example, calling them in to read something to you or to fill out a CAPTCHA screen for one of those Yahoo pages that are inaccessible. I will give you just a really brief summary here also. Kids watch what we do. And one of the things that my daughter saw me do back when she was very little was that I left an abusive marriage, I got a divorce, and I went back to school. And that's where I studied web design. And as I did that, I think my daughter watched me pick the pieces up and put them back together. And I've noticed as she's gotten older that she has that same value on learning. And so she is modeling some of what I have done. And I think that's true with any family. Our challenges are mostly mother-daughter teen stuff. It's just that one area of making sure that I don't depend on her too heavily for everything that needs to be done by a sighted person. What I did to solve mine is that I hire a college student to come in for 2 hours a week and do the little piddly sighted stuff, that it would be so easy to just yell across the hall and say, you know, would you please come fill this out for me? Instead, I save all of that up. I put it all on a to-do list, and each Saturday I have a student that helps me do all that little piddly stuff.
Yeah, I raised three kids as a blind parent, and I think you're right. It's very easy to go the other way. I know that that I think I sometimes went too far in the other direction, and I was involved in when I was raising my three kids. I was involved in a relationship that didn't end up going well, and was with a sighted person. Though we stayed together for 17 years, so we stayed together till the kids were teenagers. But then we ended up not staying together. So it can be truly interesting. Does your daughter share any interests with you? Do you do some of the computer stuff that you do together, or anything like that?
Oh, we both like to play around on MySpace and Facebook. You can add music videos to your MySpace and do little fun quizzes, and we do those together. We share an interest in music, and that's something that we can do. I think we have a really good relationship. You know, I keep seeing these books about how hard it is to have a teenager around. I think it's much harder to raise an infant as a blind parent than it is to have a teenager. We talk about stuff. She's a very artistic person, and she's been taking web design class. I made her take that. I told her she could take any other elective she wanted the rest of the way through high school, but 1 year of web design. And it turns out that she loves it because she can make all kinds of graphics and things like that. And it's kind of, I knew that would happen. So we do things like that together, too. Of course, she does some of the teenage things, you know, disobeys or doesn't do something. But usually, she'll come and tell me about it so that she already knows it's not a good thing to do and corrects it. I'm very fortunate in that way, but I think a lot of it was when she was younger, I set some good boundaries with her, and I've tried to be a parent when she needs a parent and a friend when she needs a friend. And that's kind of a balancing act. I bet you experienced that with your three, knowing when to give them a break and when to get firm and say, no, that's not going to work, and we're going to have to do the punishment thing. In our state, my daughter can legally get her driver's license now. This may be an issue that is worth exploring. She's allowed to get her driver's license because I'm blind and I'm the head of household. However, at 14, I don't think she's ready. I think she's responsible enough, but I don't think that the brain coordination matures as quickly. And so I'm going ahead and waiting until she's 16, just like her other sighted, you know, her classmates with sighted families. I hope I'm making the right decision. That's one of those that I guess I won't know until history shows me. But is that an issue that you faced?
Yeah, driver's licenses were interesting. For the most part, I thought my eldest daughter was ready when the time came, and I thought my second child, who was also a girl, perhaps wasn't quite ready, but it really didn't matter because she went ahead and got her license anyhow. And at that point, I wasn't in a position to have an impact. And my son actually did well in terms of being ready for licenses. But I think the real tough thing is to again control yourself in terms of how you're going to interact with suddenly having transportation near at hand. I was pretty careful not to overuse the newfound form of transportation when it was around. I guess I'm going to ask one more question, and then I'm going to, I think, open it up and let people ask about some of the things that, or comment about some of the things that we've talked about. And my question is, why was Mom such a heavy with regard to web design? What is it in particular about web design that you felt made it such an absolute sine qua non course for high school for your daughter? And by the way, what is your daughter's name? I don't like saying daughter all the time.
Oh, her name is Charlotte. And the reason that I insisted on this one course is that I believe with all of my heart that computer skills are going to be necessary no matter what job you go into when you're out of school. And my daughter wants to work in some sort of design job, either with interior design or preferably with fashion design. She wants to come out with a line of shoes. And so I thought that having the computer skills and the web design would give her the ability to, well, to do two things. One is to be able to put her work up on the web when she's ready to sell it. But also, when she gets a summer job, she can qualify to get an office job and make a little bit more money than she could if she was flipping burgers in Burger King. There's nothing wrong with Burger King, but if she's going to work, I'd like her to get a decent amount of money and have a marketable skill. I know that she's going to go on to art school after she graduates, and I wanted her to have something that was a bread and butter, put the food on the table. We can point to this as a tangible skill asset. So that's why the web design class.
Gosh, that's pretty sensible, Mom. I'm impressed.
From ACB Radio Mainstream, you are listening to Tuesday Topics. If you have comments about the show or a suggestion of a topic you would like to have discussed, send a message to TuesdayTopics@acbradio.org. That's TuesdayTopics@acbradio.org. Once again, the host of Tuesday Topics, Paul Edwards.
So we now have the three sides of Monica Willard: the blogger, the Bookshare volunteer, and the mom. And let's open it up and see whether someone has a question or an issue that they would like to raise. Remember to tell us who you are and where you're from, and we are now open for input.
Hello, everybody. This is Gary Wood from Lansing, Michigan. Monica, that was a great presentation there. I think that she's right. I think that computers have impacted our lives so much that no matter what we do, I think that they have something to do with all of it, no matter what. I mean, like whether we work or whether we entertain ourselves or whatever we do, I think that that's the basic thing that's happening with computers these days, and blogs are one example of that.
Thanks, Gary. Someone else want to jump in on any of the three issues? The three areas of Monica?
Yes, this is Pam Drake in Visalia, California. Yes, I would have asked that question about web design also, so I'm glad you did, Paul. I happen to know of someone who is who scanned a book, and, well, long story, but he finally got it scanned. There was a copyright issue that wasn't immediately recognized. The copyright was there, but apparently the blind volunteer did not see the copyright symbol because it was it didn't show up until it was in a text file. So my questions are two. First of all, have the volunteers now been cautioned about the possibility of a copyright graphic? I mean, this book was kind of a frustrating experience, to be honest with you. And it finally was scanned, and when it was scanned, it was attributed, or whether it was finally sent, it was attributed to, quote, a Bookshare volunteer, he has to change something so that it will appear correctly. Well, this is obviously Dave we're talking about. If he wishes to rescan the book, whether he does or not, I can't speak for him. He said it was one of those in the good category. If you have a book, let me generalize it. If you have a book that you have scanned and you look at it and you say, no, maybe this isn't so great, or it isn't excellent, can that same person scan it, rescan and resubmit with a note perhaps? How does that work?
Yes, we can rescan books. I've got a couple that when I was new to volunteering that I look at now and I see some mistakes that I overlooked and that I will eventually rescan. As for the copyright symbol, part of the problem is that the person's speech synthesizer was not reading that particular punctuation. Since Dave scanned his book, there has been a volunteer manual that has been released, and Bookshare has done a lot to work on training people who validate books on how to spot those copyright symbols and how to spot other little glitches like that. Jake, I believe, is still here, and he is an intern at Bookshare. So, Jake, is there anything you would like to add to what's said here?
No, Monica, I think that. I think you covered it quite well. Yes, the volunteer manual came out last August, and we had a great response to it, and we hope to update it in the next month or two.
I guess the only other thing that I would add is one of the things that is now true and that I don't think necessarily always was is that all final decisions about what books will actually be put up there get made by in-house folks, not by volunteer validators.
Yes, that is definitely true. We have Claire and Carrie who handle the book approvals, and they are very good at what they do. They both are full-time staff members, and they are very easy to work with. The entire process for getting a book submitted to Bookshare is running more smoothly now. If you imagine a series of pulleys that used to be very rusted so that they kind of would squeak as they moved along, those have been oiled. Lisa Friendly came aboard as product manager, I believe a little over a year ago, and one of the things that she did at Bookshare is looked over and said, where are the places where we're having trouble? Where are the kinks in our pipeline? And she's been working along with the other staff to smooth those out so that it's a much easier process to deal with now. And I think really that she's done a fantastic job. I'm not just saying that because I like Bookshare. I'm saying it because as a volunteer, I was pretty frustrated with how things were a couple years back. And she's made, in my mind, an astonishing number of positive changes in the last year.
Actually, I think that almost all of us who were volunteers 2 or 3 years ago went through a period where it was really tough, because one of the things that happened is there were a lot of decisions that were being made about books that we'd worked on that lots of us didn't think were necessarily the right decisions, and we weren't sure at that point that they were sometimes being made in as sensible and appropriate a way as we thought they could be. So I absolutely agree that things are considerably better. Okay, the floor is open. Other issues or more on Bookshare?
What books that should be on Bookshare that aren't, there's a crying need for, you know, I mean, what types of books are any book that hasn't been submitted that should be?
Gary, that's a pretty good question. We get a lot of requests for different books, and in fact, we keep a wish list of the books that are requested. One thing that our volunteers are pretty good about is getting books from that wish list and scanning them. Usually, I see a lot of requests for mysteries, for sports books, and there are some requests for some cookbooks and just a variety of things. If people are members of Bookshare and they ask on one of the two Bookshare mailing lists, a lot of times they can get a book done pretty quickly. In fact, right now, on top of my scanner is a book by Liz Curtis Higgs that someone had requested. It's called Whence Came a Prince. And this is not a book I probably would have picked up on my own, but I'm sure glad that I did, because I'm scanning it for a Bookshare member, but I'm finding that I'm really enjoying the book, and I'm really glad that I got it.
Thanks very much, Monica, for that. We had a text question raised by Carrie, who wants to know both the location and what are some of the blogs that folks who are here enjoy. So we'll start with Monica and then see who else wants to jump in and talk about blogs that they enjoy. So, Monica, tell us about some of your favorite blog spots.
Okay. Well, one of the ones that I really like, which I mentioned earlier, is called it's the Ed Gorman blog, and Gorman is G-O-R-M-A-N, so edgorman.blogspot.com. The reason that I like his blog is he's a mystery author, but he's one of those, what I would call a writer's writer, in that he's willing to talk about other writers and other the work that they do and talk about the mysteries that he reads and all of that. And he's a very approachable man. Can you tell I like mysteries a lot? But he's someone, I didn't mention one concept that Mike needs just a minute of explaining. There's something called a blog roll, which is basically like if you have a blog and you want others to see the blogs that you like, you can make a blog roll, and it's just a list of links to other blogs that you like with descriptions around them. And this is one of the blogs that is on my blog rolls on all of my blogs because it's a neat place to go. So how about some of the rest of you?
Hi, this is Joni Leonard from Edison, New Jersey, and I have not really gone to very many blogs. I just want to say, Monica, your presentation tonight has been really, really enjoyable. It's really been good. But I want to talk about Bookshare because I've been a member of Bookshare for about 6 months. I also around 6 months ago, but till I got it going, I got a Victor Stream. And I can't tell you what fun I'm having. I'm an avid reader, and all my life I had to wait till the library, state library, would send me my books and everything and be very patient. And I can't get over the fact that I can go to Bookshare or the NLS download place for books. And I just think of a book that I want to read, go and get it. Faster than taking it out of a regular neighborhood library, because I don't have to walk to the library to get it. I just log on to Bookshare or the NLS thing, download the book, there it is, I can start reading. I can't get over it. The first talking book records that there were, I mean the 33s, I've built the cassettes to the now to the Victor Stream, and I've always been an avid reader, and there were times in my life when I was a very little girl where I couldn't get very much to read. Very, very frustrating, because you couldn't get talking books unless you were an adult, because the Books for the Blind law said books for the adult blind. So kids were kind of left out of that. But then things changed, and now I can have all my wishes fulfilled by the going to all these sites. And I was and am an Opticon user, but my Opticon right now is not working, so I have to get it fixed one of these days. As I always say, I'm going to do this and that one of these days, and I will.
Excellent. Thanks very much, Joni. I certainly understand the frustration of growing up without enough to read. I think that's what turned me into a scanaholic. I'm overcoming my addiction as I'm getting older and lazier, but at the time when Bookshare started, I gave them a little over 3,000 books. So there was certainly a period in my life where scanning was a pretty important part of what I did. Other people, perhaps with other blogs.
This is Brian Collins from Long Beach, California. I was wondering if you would be willing and able to provide an example, using the example since Bookshare has been mentioned. How would we as individuals get started? Say, you know, we are proud of the fact that we are members or volunteers of Bookshare and we'd like to promote that using a blog. How would we get started doing that?
Oh, okay. Well, probably the easiest way, out of all of the blogging platforms, I think that LiveJournal is the most speech-friendly for a person if they're just starting to use a blog. What a person could do is sign up for a LiveJournal blog. Basically, they ask for your username, and you make up the username that you like. And, for example, mine is Plum Lipstick. Because when I first made a blog many years ago, that was the shade of lipstick I always wore. So anyway, once you make a journal, you can start writing about some of the things that interest you. And eventually what happens with blogs is that people find each other. They connect to each other. For example, I wrote a post this last year about a family who lost their daughter right before the holidays. And I didn't know it, but several people were reading my blog, and they actually wrote to me about it, wanting to know if they could do anything to help the family. So blogs are a very public thing. What I do with Bookshare is right now I have a blog that I've recently created. It's called scannersguild.com, and on it I'm writing about what I'm doing with Bookshare, about, you know, how it works and what it does. I'm talking about some of the things that I'm scanning and things like that. If you are someone who volunteers but say that you only validate books, you could talk about some of the neat books that you're validating and just, you know, what the books are about. People are attracted to what people are doing. I don't think people go looking for Bookshare. I think people go looking for what other blind people are doing and where do the blind people get books that they want to read. And I want to read this Dick Francis book. Where can I find it in an accessible format? And that's how they find Bookshare. I don't think a family with a newly blinded person in it gets on the computer and searches for Bookshare. I think they search for, you know, accessible books or Braille books or something. They may search for, you know, something, books for blind people. And so we need to kind of be out there just talking about what we're doing and sharing it, because that's where people will find us.
You started off by saying that folks could begin by using LiveJournal, but you need to, if you would, tell us where we can get to LiveJournal to use it.
You're right, Paul. I apologize. It's at livejournal.com.
One blog, and by the way, this is Matt Cox from Garden Grove, California. One blog that I use, and in fact, it's really the only blog that I do use, is MySpace. And I have been a big MySpace blogger since November of 2005, and I find MySpace fairly accessible. Lots of graphics and lots of pictures. But both my wife and I, now my wife's not visually impaired, she got me hooked on MySpace, and now she makes fun of me. She'll jokingly say things like, oh, my husband's back on MySpace again, which is funny because I'm 34 and a bit older than the MySpace crowd, but I do enjoy keeping I just do a daily journal on there.
That's excellent. So MySpace has its own blogging software, is that right, Matt?
MySpace just has, they provide, Paul, a space where you can go in and blog, and then they post the blog for you. And they're now starting to experiment with podcasting as well. And I do podcasting on a whole different page, and if we ever do a podcasting program, I can discuss something I found on that. But the blogging, yeah, it's very simple. You just go in and you type what you're going to type, edit it, and post it.
This is John from Anaheim, California. Wondered if there was any cost involved in writing and maintaining a blog. I've read a few, but have never gotten around to actually creating one.
John, that's a good question. There are ways to write blogs that are completely free. LiveJournal has a free blog. So does Blogger, and WordPress.com also has one. Blogger is at blogger.com. LiveJournal and WordPress have extra options that you can pay for if you want them. One of the reasons that I mentioned LiveJournal.com is that it doesn't have a lot of graphics. Someone using Window Eyes or who is more comfortable with a text layout, I think, would be more at home on LiveJournal. I have a MySpace also. I just think it would be a little harder to, if you were doing your very first blog, I think it would be a little harder to adapt to. However, I may be totally, totally wrong. What I use on LiveJournal, the reason that I pay for their account, which is you can either do $5 for 2 months, or you can do, you know, other increments up to, I believe it's $20 a year, which is what I do. I do that because I can have voice posts. I can, if I can't get on the internet, or if I want to talk instead of write, I can pick up my phone, dial a phone number, and talk for a while, and it posts it to my blog, and it's there for people to listen to. So that's why I pay for a LiveJournal account, but they do have free ones.
This is Chris from Illinois. Yeah, I have used those too. I'm a big LiveJournal fan. I've got the paid account for, I think it's $25 a year, if I'm not mistaken, and I really like it a lot. I've also used, they have special programs called clients you can download, and if you don't feel like going to the website or using your email program, you can use those. And I love the phone posts. So It's great. The only problem that I know about nowadays is that some people have trouble with the CAPTCHA, and that's typing in those little characters. But other people are okay with them. So the one question I wanted to ask Monica is, are there any major differences between all of these services? And if there is any, are there any really big concerns that people with screen readers should look out for? And I just came back. I was away for a bit, so if it's already been answered, I apologize. But that's what I wanted to ask, if that's okay.
Good question, Chris. The CAPTCHA is kind of a thing that they use to keep spam bots out, but most places like Google and LiveJournal and WordPress have audio versions that you can listen to. Even Facebook has an audio version of CAPTCHA that you can listen to and type in the characters. So that's kind of cool. As for differences, in the end result, they're very similar, the blogging platforms. But in terms of how you interface with them, they can be different. I think of the services, the one that is the least accessible is Blogger, unless you're going to post by email, because they have an editor that it just doesn't read very well with JAWS. If you're typing into it, it doesn't handle things very well, because I believe it's some sort of a JavaScript editor that you type your posts in. The way that I have dealt with Blogger is by posting from my email client so that I don't have to deal with their website. But most of these places have similar features. LiveJournal is unique in having the phone posts, but other places let you attach MP3 files. So I think it comes out about the same. But my experience, as I said, is that Blogger, unless you're willing to post by email or just put up with an editor that reads kind of funny and just paste your stuff in from another program, I think Blogger is the least of accessible of the platforms.
Okay, Ms. Monica, there still seems to be a piece of the puzzle missing. Maybe there isn't, and maybe I am just slow. But it seems to me that what we now have is an editor in which we can now create a blog. But where do we save it, and where does it go, and how do people know where to find it?
When you create your blog, which is that you give it a username, I'm going to use LiveJournal as an example so that I can be specific. When you sign up for LiveJournal and give them a username, they will create a URL that looks like http://, then your username, which is -plumlipstick.livejournal.com. So the web address is there. Now, if I sign in to livejournal.com, there's an area where I can start writing a post, and each time I write it, I can give it a different title. Like, today I'm eating spaghetti, and I can write about that and even give my recipe for the spaghetti sauce. And when I save that, it is stored in the blog. As for how you let other people know where it is, some of us put our URL in the signature of our email. Some of us, since I'm a marketing director for my dad's company, I work with a couple of search engines that specialize in blogs, and I add my blogs to it so that people can find me searching from Google. So there are a lot of different ways to do it. The other thing is that on LiveJournal, for example, Chris, who just asked a question here, is the person that got me started blogging. I even told him I wasn't interested for almost a whole year. And then I complained, and finally one day I did it. And so when I signed in, I set him up as one of my friends. And soon I found other people on there that wrote interesting blogs. So I made them, I added them to my friends page as well. One of your ACBRI broadcasters, Shannon Reese, is on LiveJournal, and I found her on there, so I added her to my friends page. So that's the other way that we find each other, is by poking around on the LiveJournal site.
Would any other bloggers like to add to anything that Monica's said, or to talk about other blog sites that you guys find particularly cool?
Well, this is Brian again, and I think blogging is if you're a person who's expressive and you really want to, you know, get your personal feelings out to your friends, your family, blogging is a great way to do that because it can be both a private and personal thing to where you basically only let a specific small group of people that you know aware that you've got a blog. Or if you're a person who is trying to promote a business or an organization or an institution or something along these lines, it has the potential of reaching the whole, basically the whole internet through a series of tools that Monica referred to. And there's some really basic steps that can be learned to do that. And I really like the flexibility and the ability to be both personal and professional all at the same time. And it's kind of fun to see how somebody who has the, you know, who's got the notoriety of a Jonathan Mosen, so to speak, who can go out and have a blog that is a lot of fun, but at the same time you can tell that he's doing a little bit of personal stuff in there. And that's the best part about blogging, is that it's so flexible. And it's just like keeping a digital diary or a digital diary slash photo album or movie type of a thing for those who are into the hefty part of blogging. So anyway, it covers a huge, huge category of the internet, and it's going to continue to improve and get better.
And it's interesting, Brian, that you brought that up. It's Matt Cox again. You have to be careful, in a sense, as to what you're writing. I remember reading a story once, and this was genuinely true. It was in the newspaper. The girl had written, she was a 14-year-old in Kentucky, and she wrote in her blog, quote, "I'm going to kill the president," end quote. The Secret Service were at her school within days after that blog had receded. Somehow someone saw it. They did question her about it. They didn't arrest her. But you do have to be, you know, you really do have to be kind of careful what you write. I had an incident happened to me once where I was writing about my friend's nasty divorce, and that divorce wound up never happening. They managed to keep their marriage together. But I wrote a lot about it in one blog entry. And just for the fun of it, I Googled my friend's name, just completely bored. And what was the first thing that came up? That blog I had written 3 months ago about his just nasty at that time, because it was a really, it was a nasty divorce. So after I'd written it, I called him and I said, you know, Eric, I want you to know I wrote something. And he said, oh, that's fine. You know, and he and Melanie have since patched it up. But should you go back through the pages of the blog, it's there for you from 2006.
Oh, dear. I guess that just says something about caution. And that, of course, is important in terms of anything you put out there online or this is Pam Drake from Visalia, California again. God forbid the things that have happened to kids who have been abducted by predators by divulging too much information. I suppose one can't be too careful. My question was, and it sort of ties into it, but what's a good length for a particular, is there any? Is a trick to keep it interesting enough that if you write a 50-page entry, people won't get bored? Or are there limitations as to how long a particular entry can be on various sites?
Usually what they'll do, Pam, is if it's a long post, they'll break it up into 4 or 5 pages. Sort of like if you were writing on a piece of paper and you got to the end, you'd need to make a page two. Part of that is because most people, when they are reading a blog, they need some sort of visual, you know, breaking it up so it's not this huge long thing that takes screen after screen. Having said that, blog posts can be pretty long. They don't have to be extremely short. There are places like MySpace and Facebook that keep children who are underage in a different community. For example, I as an adult cannot join their high school network. Only kids who are in high school can join that. Of course, I could have made a profile and pretended to be a teenager, but they do some screening to try to make sure that doesn't happen. I want you to think about a number I'm going to put out here because it's huge. Facebook has right now approximately 82 million, with an M, accounts, of which about half are accessed at least once a week. So if you are writing a post and it does get onto Facebook and people start reading it, you will get some traffic to your website. You will get your phone ringing if you're a business. What I tell people to do, and I do this myself, is I have a personal blog. I've told you about it, the Live Journal one. Then I have a professional blog, which is my scannersguild.com, about Bookshare. So I keep them separate so that if I want to write about something in my personal life, it's not mixed in with what I'm doing professionally. Because a lot of times people want to know about the professional stuff and they don't want to wade through my recipe for marshmallow fudge to get to the information that they want. So I keep them totally separate.
There is a statement out there, and I guess I'm opening this question to all the bloggers who are out there, that this year, 2008, is the first election that blogs are actually going to have a pretty significant role to play in. And there's an argument out there that there are a number of people from both political parties and from various wings of both political parties who are actually having a huge impact by blogging. Do you guys believe that blogging is as influential as it's claimed to be, or is it kind of an overrated art form?
That's an excellent question, Paul. Me personally, I want to believe that. Absolutely, I want to believe that. But I tend to, I don't know, I want to believe that, you know, blogging, because I think blogging, especially with today's, you know, people don't take the time to read the paper anymore. People may only take 30 seconds now to watch CNN, you know, and stuff. So I want to think that more people are reading blogs. On the other hand, you know, I probably have 17, I know I have 17 faithful readers because they're my friends on MySpace. So, you know, I do sometimes wonder if, you know, I mean, of course, my blog is primarily full of just personal stuff, and there you go. But I do wonder if blogging is more overrated and just kind of more an electronic way of keeping one's daily journal handy.
I would take the opposite tack. I do see your point, Matt, that it can be just an electronic journal, and it can be for some people. But if you guys know these two names, you'll understand what I mean. Trent Lott and Dan Rather both were toppled by people who saw what they did and did not like it and began blogging with each other. They began blogging across the country saying, I have information that proves, for example, with Dan Rather, I have information that proves that what he says is not correct. And it mushroomed on both of these people. Trent Lott's gaffe, 20 years ago, could have been buried. The newspapers weren't really focusing on it. It could have gone away. But people didn't like what he did, and it really did balloon. I don't think that there's an organized blog mafia out there that's trying to influence politics, but people do share ideas with each other. And sometimes if an idea really takes off, it really takes off.
I think tonight's been interesting in that it certainly provided me with at least the beginnings of an understanding of the blogging phenomenon. I think I'm going to have to do some investigating. And perhaps down the road, I might, once I know a little bit more, want to do another show on blogging, because I still have a lot of unanswered questions. Let's go around and see if people have final comments on any of the three areas. Poor Charlotte's kind of gotten short shrift here, but I think it's not so much because we don't care, Charlotte. It's that we got fixated on blogging and Bookshare.
This is Brian Collins, and I just wanted to thank you, Paul, for providing the subject, because I do believe it is a needed subject for people of all types to take a look at and consider as a possible option to let the world know what they think and how they feel about life and the world around them. And I want to thank Monica for being a part of it.
Well, I think that this has been an interesting program tonight, and Monica is an interesting person to listen to. Blogs sound like a pretty good thing. Somebody mentioned podcasts, and that's a new thing, interesting way to do it too, because you can podcast about anything, just about, and you can, even if you have like you can go to the Smokies or any place else or Disneyland and do a podcast on that, and if it's like in stereo and stuff, you can actually feel like you're there, and you can hook it up to your MP3 player and while away the time, you know, and listening to it on the stereo. But the thing is, with all the podcasts out there, you better have an MP3 player that can put all those in there, because it'd use up a lot of space if you want to do schedule those kind of things.
Well, Monica, thank you for this presentation. I came in late, sorry, but you know, I feel like I've learned something tonight, and you're just a wonderful asset to this group, and it's always a pleasure to work with you and have you and consider you a very dear friend. And Gary, I agree with you about podcasting. That was me that was talking about podcasting. I love to podcast, and I've got a podcast, my very own podcast at Podshow, or actually it's my very own podcast.podshow.com. I'll just throw that in. And right now it just has a lot of, there are a few with just me in there, but I'm putting our Brunch with the Brit shows up there so people can listen to those. And that's how my aunt and uncle get it. They just put it in the iPod and take it on their walks.
Matt, how would you like to be our featured guest and talk about your experience with podcasting next week?
I can do that, actually. I'll just push my meeting time with Fred back an hour, so I didn't know we're doing BI. I'd love to talk about the podcast, because I'm new at it, but I found something, Paul, that is very accessible, I think, that's free, and I'd be happy to go over the steps and talk about kind of what I've done and even play a couple samples of stuff I've done.
I think that would be very cool. So now everybody who's listening will know what we're going to do next week, all other things being equal. Any final comments for the good of the order? We had two text folks indicating that they thought this was a pretty cool presentation, and thank you to all of the lurkers who kind of hang around in spite of not having microphones who participate sometimes with text messages. We're certainly glad to have you with us. Ladies and gentlemen, this has been a really interesting program for me. We've gotten a chance to get to know Monica Willyard better. We've gotten an opportunity to find out how full of life a person can choose to lead and what interesting areas that person can get directly involved in. Monica, we very much appreciate your being there. We certainly appreciate what you do for Bookshare on a daily basis, and we're absolutely intrigued by the idea of blogging that you certainly helped me to understand better. Thanks to everyone for tuning in to Tuesday Topics this evening, and for all of you new folks who participated with us this evening. Really do appreciate having you around. I hope you will make this a part of your Tuesday evening. We really do enjoy having lots of folks who can participate with us in the recording of Tuesday Topics. I'd like to thank Monica and everyone else who was here. Remember, our email address is TuesdayTopics@acbradio.org. This is Paul Edwards in Miami, Florida, saying good night. And remember, when you listen to ACB Radio, perhaps you'll actually get ideas that you can then include in blogs. So, thanks everyone. Good night.
To participate in the recording of Tuesday Topics, we invite you to join us on Tuesday evenings in the U.S. at 9 p.m. Eastern. That's Wednesday at 2 hours Universal. The program is recorded in the Our Place Politics chat room at ourplace.acbradio.org. That's ourplace.acbradio.org. All you need is a microphone that is plugged into your computer sound card. A few minutes before each program begins, those who are online will be happy to assist with audio checks and to answer questions about the chat room software. An announcement about the show, including information about the topic and the guest speaker, will be emailed to the ACB Radio Friends List. So we hope you will come and join us each week on Tuesday, when Tuesday Topics is being recorded. We'll look for you in the Our Place Politics chat room at ourplace.acbradio.org. Tuesday Topics is a production of ACB Radio Mainstream.